You are listening to the JCN Clinic Podcast. The JCN Clinic Podcast is a place where nutritionalists Jessica Cox and Carissa Mason get real about nutrition and living a healthy life. They share with you their passion and their clinical knowledge for a fun, no BS approach to looking after yourself. Please enjoy today's episode and don't forget to subscribe in iTunes.
Hello and welcome to the JCN Clinic podcast show. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Carissa.
And today we are talking about what you need to know about your poo.
We are here for some shit talk.
We are. We did do a podcast on this topic many years ago. Like I'm talking, like 7-ish years ago. That's how I think the podcast has been going for quite some time. So, there will be a little bit of going over some points, but we thought it's been a long time. There's always new info to talk about, a lot of new listeners, and this is a really important topic. So we're going to dive into why you need to know about your poo, what you need to know, and why as clinical nutritionists, particularly in the gut space, we are always talking every day about poo. And we will refer to poo as stools interchangeably. In clinic, we do often use the word stool with our clients. I do. Carissa probably doesn't as much as me. I'm not sure.
Depends on the client.
Depends
on the client, the rapport, and what I feel like I can get away with.
Yeah, and particularly with kids, right? When you have a kid, you don't tend to ask them about their stool. You'll like definitely use the word poos.
And if we've got our adults, they're a little bit more like me. I just say shit.
Yep, that's it.
Tell me about your shit habits.
So we thought we want to break it down and talk about different presentations of stools, what they can tell us and how all the variations that we look for. So that's going to be really good to go through, and we know you'll learn a lot from that and what to look for yourself. But we thought we'd start with why knowing about what your poo is doing, the habits of your poo, is really important, and why for us it's important clinically. There's a reason, many reasons, which will become apparent when we're with our clients every day and part of a consultation, whether it's an initial or follow-ups. This is a classic area we're talking about. So did you want to start with that one, Rissy, as to why the stools are clinically important?
I think we could actually go as far as to say it's almost a health report card. So in the way that we talk about, like anyone who's been listening to our podcast for a while and even on social media, we talk about in the female space, your period being like your monthly report card for your health and your hormones. I think your poo and how that happens and when it occurs and the consistency of it, and so much around those bathroom habits are a big telltale into how well your diet is suited to you, how well you're handling your stress, and just how well your bowel is functioning as a whole. So we have a lot of strategic questions that we ask our clients when we're talking about poo. We don't just go, oh, you know, how often do you open your bowels? Like I feel like in a standard consultation outside of our clinic environment with someone who's probably, or a physician or something who's maybe not as gut focused as what we are, the standard questions are really just related around how often do you open your bowels and if there's anything concerning. And so that's probably the limitations of what some people might have experienced outside of a non-gut focused clinic, but because we are a gut health focused clinic, our questions are quite in depth. So we really get into the nitty gritty of this because there's so much that for us is clinically relevant and clinically important, but it gives us such a big snapshot into you and your health as an individual, really. So it's pretty bloody important.
Yeah, perfectly put. And I was just thinking too, as you're saying that, about maybe outside of this environment when people are asked about their bowel motions, the average person that we see in the clinic, well, okay, so not everyone would fall into this, but there's a large percentage of people who don't actually understand what is normal. And we will talk about that as we go through. But if you don't ask enough questions, if people feel even a little embarrassed or funny about it at first, like they can quickly brush it off and they're like, oh, no, it's, yeah, I'm fine. Or like, oh, yeah, that's all normal. And then we ask our questions and we quickly establish, well, actually, no, that's not normal. Correct. So, yeah, I think that's always important too. So let's dive into it. We want to go over the different types of stools and like then there's the different presentations in the stools or the bowel movements themselves. Mm-hmm. And then there's also how frequently they're moving. So there's lots of components. So when we're talking about the different types of stools, probably the first thing is how the consistency of the stool varies. Some of you might have heard of the Bristol stool chart. We should try and pop a little picture up of that when we put up this podcast as a little image that you can refer to. Some people come into the clinic and they know what this is, but basically it's a chart that is used pretty much throughout, like not just in Australia, like clinically, it's been around for ages, that will tell you a ranking number of where you sit on the Bristol stool chart on the formation, and there'll be a picture of that. So basically though, what the Bristol stool chart is doing and what we do in clinic is we're looking at what's the formation like as far as whether it's consistency wise is loose. So we're going from one end of the spectrum to like a diarrhea, watery diarrhea, to loosey goosey. Yeah, right. To loose, I'll often say to my clients almost like a cow pat consistency. So it's like my completely like ploppy. Yeah, right.
I feel like everyone like knows plop. What it is.
Yeah, everyone. This is why we use these terminologies instead of being like, are you a Bristol start number two or four? Like yes. It's just, yeah. So cow patty, then there might be the formed stool that's still kind of falling apart when it hits the water, so it's quite broken up. Then we get into a well-formed stool, which we'll talk about as we move along. And then moving out the other end of the spectrum is where things start to get harder to pass. The stool itself is like a lot more compacted and lumpy, and yeah, it can physically be hard to pass, to then moving to even like pellet-like, like a little rabbit or a goat that's dropped some little pellets in the toilet bowl. So basically when we're talking about types of stools, we're looking for variations of what that consistency is, which can tell us a lot. Carissa's putting up her hand.
I just have a fun fact that I learned recently. Mm-hmm. Did you know wombat shit square?
Yes.
What is that I know. About?
Isn't it the most craziest thing to get your head around?
So when we were down in Tassie, my mum, she bought, this is so funny, but it's so classic of her. You have all those little like fold-out guides that you can buy from the information centres. I was obsessed with the fungus ones because obviously there's so many different types of fungi down in. But mum buys a shit chart of all the animals. So when she finds droppings, she can identify what that's animal has cool. been. Yeah, so it's this big laminated, you know, thing that's like maybe A5 or even smaller, but it folds out into this massive chart and it's just literally the different shit of all the animals down in Tassie. So from that, we learned, and my niece Sienna actually bought one of those little, printed things that you build. They're all like flat packed and then you build it into a three-dimensional shape. And the wombat shit was square. And that's how I learned. And I was just amazed.
You're like, mind is blown.
Mind is blown. Do they have square assholes? Does it pump this out this way?
Like instantly, that's what you think about, isn't it? Like this perfectly square little butthole.
Is your butthole square?
I mean, it must be, right? Like they must have, like, or is the actual like large, like that?
I feel like it had something to do with
colon must be square, and then it
just pops out. I feel like you're right with the colon thing. I think it's got to have something to do with that. We should actually look it up. But if anyone's listening, maybe someone else has the answer for this. But I was just
if someone knows, tell us.
We could probably Google it, but we won't worry on the podcast. But anyway, when you start,
I don't know if there's any other animals that do square shits. I'm not actually sure.
No.
I feel like I've had this conversation before. But yeah, right. Like, wow.
Okay. I've just Googled what animals shit square. Literally. Humans may be fascinated by cues, but only one animal poops them, the bare-nosed wombat. The furry Australian marsupial squeezes out nearly 100 six-sided turds every day. An ability that has long mystified scientists. Oh my god. So anyway, so that was a fun fact for everyone.
Yep,
we could go into more, but I feel like I'm gonna have to read and we'll get totally off topic as to why they shit square. Anyway.
What does that mean clinically when you poo in a cube?
If you shit in a cube. So anyway, I'll let just keep going.
So, yeah, the spectrum first we're looking for is that variation in consistency. And we'll get into what that means as we go through. Actually, maybe we'll talk about what these mean as we go through. So, yeah, like we're not going over the same thing. So let me talk maybe first to the loose end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. and then I'll hand over to you for the kind of constipated end.
Compacted end.
Compacted
end.
So why are we worried, or are we raising a flag over looseness? Looseness usually shows us that there's some urgency in that stool rushing through your system. We don't want stools rushing through really quickly. We want them to be, which again we'll get into as far as being well-formed stools and what that transit time looks like. But if we're looking at a bowel movement rushing through, there's usually a reason that will be behind that, which is not ideal. So it can be a selection of reasons, and this is our job too as a practitioner to work this out. So it can be in relation to food. So it might be a reactivity to something that you've eaten in regard to something you may be intolerant to, particularly if the looseness, this is another thing as far as our questioning, is like how often this is happening. Mm. So I should mention I'm speaking to someone that generally experiences loose bowel movements, anything from that kind of cow patty looseness through to like diarrhea, and it's like consistent. So there may be some food issues where they're consuming something that is creating an inflammatory response and their body is just like, ugh, get out, I don't like you, which is usually the way I would describe it to a client, and it's rushing through. A classic one might be like a lactose intolerance. Like often you'll see like a loose response there. It may be microbiome driven. So we've got certain changes in the microbiome, whether that's in the lower bowel or with something like SIBO classically, where the bacterial terrain will change and the types of gases that are being produced can cause more of a looser response, or kind of like a layered effect where that can be going on, but there is just a lot of inflammation in general that's happening in response environment that causes that rushing through of the bowel. So what we tend to see clinically is that it can be one or the other, or often it can be these two in conjunction. It can also be stress induced. Mm-hmm. So we'll see people who may not be having any issues with the microbiome and they may actually not be having any food intolerances, but it could be an ongoing chronic stress response. Like we've all experienced to a point, I'm sure, when you've had like a really heightened stress environment. The classic example is like the person who's afraid of public speaking and they're like ready to go up and like, oh my God, I'm going to shit my pants. Like there's a reason that's a saying. So that ongoing stress can be an issue. And again, unfortunately, it can also be layered in with the others. If you're really stressed and you've got microbiome irregularities and you've got food intolerances, you know, and this is what we see a lot of at the clinic. Mm. It's all packed in on top of each other. There can also be, I mean, with the microbiome too, which really comes back to irregularities, but I guess it's worth mentioning that it could also be off the back of a recent exposure to either a parasite, like a pathogen or a pathogenic bacteria, but it's been going on for some time. So I just feel like that's worth mentioning for the classic, got back from Bali 3-6 months ago and I've like had loose bowels since. Like, yes, that's microbiome driven, but it can also be mainly because of some form of pathogen. Chris is hand is up. So
I'm trying not to interrupt you.
No.
It's my little I've got something to add. The other thing that I see, and I know you see this as well, is undiagnosed inflammatory bowel disease disorders. So obviously not as common, well, actually quite common, but not as common as all the other things. But there's a lot of people who actually, again, think that just having loose bowels every day is normal, or it's their normal because at least they're opening their bowels every day. But I've seen ulcerative colitis clients, celiac disease clients, Crohn's, and even into bowel cancer. Like, usually there's some pretty strong warning signs by the time these diseases progress. But in the early stages, like if you're someone who is getting loose bowels all the time, especially if there's any sort of like blood, I know Jess and I are going to talk about this later, but that's another one with loose bowels. I've had clients that have had that going on for, you know, several years, and then we do some testing and I'm like, we need to get you off to a gastro because I think there's a little bit more going on here than just SIBO or something like that. So that's another one.
You just freaked a whole lot of people out.
Yes, I didn't mean to.
No, Carissa is so right. And there will be some other complexities that we'll mention that we'll get into that might
don't freak out.
Heighten that.
Don't freak out. Sorry.
just putting the shits up, yeah. Pardon the pun. So usually before I hand over to Carissa to talk the other end of the spectrum, usually with any of this sort of presentation, we're going to ask further questions to really help delineate between the like really strong red flag versus, okay, we think there might be more of a not just a microbiome issue or a food intolerance issue or a stress issue. So there'll be some other questions we'll answer, which will dictate the path we take, which we'll come to. But yeah, do you want to talk more to that other end of the spectrum?
Yeah, so the other end of the spectrum is when we become what we would just clinically call constipation. And classic signs of that are not someone who's, you know, constipated, you know, I guess it's, again, determining what's normal, right? So so some people's, like, normal is they have a bowel motion every second day, but if they feel like they have a good evacuation, their bowel motions are well-formed, it's quite healthy when we talk about, like, the texture and everything of it. So if that's you, that's not constipation. It is okay to be someone who has a bowel motion every second day. Some people have them every day and some people are 2 to 3 a day. So this is why it is important to talk about things in what's normal for you and have that chat with someone who really understands gut function, because, you know, Jess and I and all the girls at the clinic, but we go into the in-depth with the question so we can sort of ascertain whether or not it's normal. But what we definitely then see just start to slip up the other side of the spectrum of the Bristol stool chart is what we would call, actual constipation. And that's when the stool actually becomes quite hard to pass for some people, or they are passing it, but when they look at it in the toilet bowl, it's coming out in these hard compacted pebbles, or it's very, well, it may not look dehydrated, but if it's got a lot of cracks and it's kind of like these hard little pebbles just compacted together in this big lumpy poo sort of a thing, that's what we would call a dehydrated stool. So there's obviously several things that contribute to that. Water and hydration obviously being the most obvious one, lack of fiber being another one as well, but also to exactly what Jess was saying with certain gases and things happening in the microbial space that can cause loose bowels. We also have that conversely in the other side of the space where different bacteria produce different types of gases that actually sort of paralyze the bowel wall and the space and actually make you quite constipated. So you can just have actual like functional things going on, you like from a like an actual bowel perspective, like the muscle may not be working as well as it should be. You could have hydration issues, you could have microbial imbalance issues. Anything I've forgotten?
No, I think that's the main one. Probably the only other one would be food reactivity, like as far as certain foods that we see.
Yeah.
I guess we see that more clinically, anecdotally, certain foods that we feel cause more of that kind of constipated response.
Bum glue.
Yeah, that's all right. I forgot you call it that. Bum glue food.
Response. Oh, dear.
Yeah. And I'd probably even tack on the end about the stress, which is kind of always interesting, isn't it, individually. Like some people it's like looseness, how are you? I know when I'm stressed, I'm actually the opposite. I'm like, I'll get loose.
No, I'm the opposite. I'll be
like, the opposite.
Total opposite. I talk about this with my clients. Like, and I say, like, we're just, people will go one or the other way. And it's the same, same with weight, right? Like, when some people are stressed, they get loose bowels, they lose weight. I always feel they go hand in hand. Like my mum and my sister are loose stools, lose weight easily, like all of that kind of stuff. Mm. And I'm the opposite. If I'm stressed, it's like my body just locks up and piles on weight. Like I just puff up and store shit. So
puff up like a puffer fish.
Like a puffer fish, literally. But it's true. People go one, and everyone listening, now that it's been brought to your awareness, you will know which way you go. So you're either a puffer fish, or we need to come up with a name for you, you skinny shitters. ones that lose weight and just shit. Oh, the nervous rabbit versus the puffer fish. Yeah, the
nervous little rabbit.
But it's true, right? So
it always reminds me of chickens. Chickens are like so like flighty and stressy. It's just like just any sort of fear that you get. Like it's like when I let them out of their cage. Not cage, in the morning, like they're all like around me, and then like they get past me and they just stop and do this big like explosion release.
Literally it. Like the nervous chickens versus the puffer fish. Which one are you?
So that gives a good example of the variations and the consistency. So then we've got other layers that we'd look at that Carissa alluded to. So we're also going to ask about what we might also see in the stool itself. So one can be blood. Blood is a very important one for us to ask questions around. And if we see blood or hear about blood, we definitely are flagging this with, do we need to refer? So there can be blood in the stool that is quite vibrant and rich and red in color, and it may just be a little bit. Often this blood is not as much of a kind of, I want to say a red, like a big red flag. It's still something of concern, but it means that it's like fresher and around that anus area itself. So it might be a little tear. Someone might already, a lot of the time our clients already know, they're like, oh yeah, I've got a fissure, or I've got
hemorrhoids.
Like they tend to know. So that blood can be very fresh. So they wipe and there's a bit on the toilet paper and like, yeah, I've got a little little cut there. I just know when that gets aggravated. So sometimes it's like, okay, well, we know what that is. Sometimes there can be a lot of blood. Like anytime there's a lot of blood, it could still be like from a hemorrhoid, but of course something that we're going to very quickly flag and say we need to refer you on to your GP and probably to a gastroenterologist very quickly as far as scope. So blood you don't mess around with. But then we have something we call occult blood, and we can see this in functional testing, but we can see it in or you can see it, we ask you about it, in the color of the stool. So it can actually make a stool really dark and almost like a blacky sort of color, but it's like the blood is we call it older as such because it's from higher up in the intestinal tract. So it means that blood is coming from further up in the system, which means there's some sort of bleed happening in the intestinal tract further up, which is not ideal. And that could be, as Carissa was saying before, like worst case scenario, that is associated with cancer, definitely with IBD conditions. So anything like that, we have to rule out. And we would look at referral. And they definitely, you don't mess around with that. I'm sure everyone knows if you see blood in the toilet bowl from a bowel motion, there's a reason we're all a little bit, what's that? We'll have a lot of questioning around blood if there is blood. But, if someone is saying to us, oh, yeah, I have hemorrhoids, you know, this is just something I get occasionally, of course, that's different to some other feedback. So, anything else you wanted to say about blood?
I was just going to say with occult blood too, it's not always obvious. Sometimes it is microscopic, and that's why sometimes too testing can be a good idea. If you're someone who is listening to this and you're like, oh, hang on, I do get loose stools as my norm, but I'm not currently seeing you guys at the clinic or a functional, you know, specialist in that works with gastrointestinal health. If you're a little bit worried, go straight to your GP, tell them that you just want to check your bowel habits and just do two tests. It's literally one poop test and it will test your fecal calprotectin and do a cold blood. So if just even as a general health sort of screen, that's what they do in the over 50s bowel screen. That's literally the only two markers they're looking at. That will just give you an idea of how concerned you need to be about anything like that. Because, yeah, blood's not always obvious. It can be microscopic and does sometimes need to just be picked up with testing. The other flip side of it is it's not always something sinister. So don't fuck around with it, but don't go, oh, okay, well, I've had this, but the girl said it's not always something sinister. Don't fuck around with it. Get it sorted out. Get it checked by a gastro. But out of all the occult blood I see in stool test results, which I see quite a bit, I'm going to say the percentage of it that goes on to be something very sinister like cancer or inflammatory bowel disease is not – it's a percentage, but it's usually something maybe in between. So something that's been like a very persistent bacterial or parasitic infection can also cause this. Polyps further up in the bowel and things like that as well. So there are other explanations, but it's just find out. Find out what you're dealing with so we can help you work it out, or you can have a gastro help you work it out and then come and see us after. So.
That process of elimination is really important. It's like, anything else, it's, I don't know, like a lump in your breast, right? You got a lump in your breast, you're just going to go and get that checked out just to make sure, like, you're not dealing with anything sinister versus, like, getting that diagnosed, getting that ruled out and you're like, okay, I've got lumpy breasts. Like, it's just, I just sort of think about it in the same manner. But yeah, that's a really important point. Like it may actually not be evident to the eye, and that is something we'll see with testing. And I agree, like when I have these things come up on functional testing, like there's a referral consideration depending on where they're at with their specialist on the side anyway. But also there's often some retesting that happens very quickly depending on what's going on, and like often it is more that it's these other more like very strong inflammatory factors that are driving it. It's not like the likelihood of like, oh, this is cancerous, but do the right thing.
100%.
So what about mucus? What about undigested food? Do you want to speak a little bit to those?
Yeah. So mucus is something we ask about a lot in the clinic as well. So once we've talked to you about your stool consistency, then our next questions will be, do you ever see any blood? We'll unpack that. And our next question, I feel like you and I probably ask these even in the same order, because the way that you've written out our talking points for today is literally the order in which I talk to clients about things. So mucus is another one. So mucus is something that is quite common in people's stools. They do see it quite a lot. So when I'm asking people, do you see any blood, do you see any mucus? If they say yes to mucus, I'm like, cool, tell me more about that, because that gives us an idea too of what's going on. Mucus is not ideal in the stool, but there's also different variations as to how it occurs. So for some people it is, my clients will just get like sort of like a clear mucus sometimes when they wipe, but other clients are actually seeing it in the toilet bowl mixed in with the stool, where it's like white and cloudy, or even sounds a bit gross, but even like a bit more yellowy or something like that. If there's actually quite a bad gut infection going on or some sort of bowel disease going on, I have clients that literally shit mucus. Like I've had people in my client space say to me, oh yeah, sometimes I go to the toilet and I just poo out.
My clinic.
Oh no, sorry.
The worst thing then. Wait a second. Sorry, Carissa. I'm just going to pass.
I was trying to say like my client demographic, but I said it wrong. And then no one has shitted mucus in my clinic yet. How about your space, Jess?
Not yet. I do have a good stool story, but that's between you and I, that I'm doing, you know, and I'm not sharing with anyone else. It's the client based.
So obviously mucus is a big consideration as well. So again, similar to blood, we will ask you more questions around it, the type, the color, how often. Like a little bit of mucus here and there is probably just something we're going to investigate with some comprehensive stool testing or some food elimination and anti-inflammatory gut support. And if it goes away, then we can be quite confident that we've actually cleared up whatever was causing that inflammatory response or that infection in the bowel. If it's anything more sinister, though, again, that's where we're referring on. So it comes down to the type, the frequency, how often, and what we sort of do about it. But again, if you're someone that's noticing this and you're seeing quite often, like, little red flag, have a chat to us or, yeah.
So true. I wonder too how many people listening at this point, they're just like, I have no idea. Like, it's just as usual, you know, I'm thinking about how often we ask these questions, and a lot of people in the initial consultations are just like, oh, I don't know. Oh, I don't know. I don't really look.
I do not look at your shit. Like, blows my mind. People say to me, I don't look. And I'm like, what? Like, the look on my face must just be like absolute confusion. It's like, it's so interesting. How can you not turn around and have a look at what you've just left in the toilet bowl? Like, yes.
So hopefully everyone listening by now is like thinking, I need to look more. If you're like, I don't know the answer to any of these questions, this is highlighting how important this is. Undigested food. So, again, we'll talk about this a little later as far as like changes that can happen that are sort of in the spectrum of normal. But if you are having consistent undigested food in your stool to the point of like being able to visually see chunks of, like, I've had clients tell all sorts of things. I can see a big chunk of broccoli. I can see meat fibers. Like, they can literally see pieces of their food in their stool. It's just like the stuff that is just like, whoa, that you can see coming through that is consistently or on a regular basis in the stool is definitely not ideal. Like, there can be some food that we don't digest as well, different types of fibers, which again we'll talk about, that if you eat them, there's potentially, you know, for most people we're going to see some of that in the stool. But we're talking now about these like consistent undigested food matter, and that is important for us to know about because it means that you're not breaking down that food effectively within the intestinal tract. So it can often allude to poor digestive enzyme function, whether that is in the, like, starting right up upper gastric within the stomach and stomach acid production breaking, particularly as far as protein is concerned, but then moving into the small intestinal tract, and how the enzyme function is working optimally there to help with breaking down that food matter. So enzyme function will be really critical as far as like a next point of call we're going to consider here. But it can also play back to things like we talked consistency. So if we're getting someone with a lot of loose bowel movements and things moving through quickly, then there can also be just not enough time for food to be digested. Correct. So we'll often have clients that will tell us that they have loose bowel movements and that they can see food in that. And I'm like, well, you know, that obviously also makes sense. But yeah, that undigested food, I feel like that one is also one that a lot of people don't maybe equate with being as problematic. I mean, sometimes people are concerned about it, but yeah, as far as what that means with breaking that food. And obviously, just to, you know, the why that's a problem is that one, it can increase fermentability within the intestinal tract as far as like how microbes can be affected in their growth patterns and how that can then create, that we're talking about different gases before, that can be produced that can be detrimental. So it can basically have a flow on effect to how the microbiome responds to the environment, but also like it's a bit of a sign of like, well, how much are you getting from your food? Like, obviously you're still getting nutrition to a point because you're not, why do I always say you're not dead? Why does it always come up in the podcast? Oh, no. I'll just say it again.
So
you know, you're alive, you're living, you're walking around, but you're probably not getting optimal nutrition from your food if you're like not breaking it down effectively. Is there anything I've missed with undigested food?
I don't think so.
Stop alluding to people being dead, Jessica. Oh,
so true. Oh no, you.
What about? There you go.
Oh no, I was just gonna say you covered it well, and you didn't give everyone a death sentence, so we did well.
What about colour?
Colour is an interesting one. I feel like most stools normally should be a shade of brown, is what I say to my clients. So if we're starting to see changes, Jess mentioned like the darker, blacker stools, then we want to have a question around potentially, is there some old blood in the stool? Are you taking an iron supplement or things like that? I think it's always very important to not to freak out over the color of your stool and be very rational about what you do on a daily basis that could be influencing it. Obviously, people that take and eat a lot of greens or have a lot of greens powders and things like that, their poo will be a browny green. So sometimes when people say things to me, they're like, my stool's green, and I just think that's abnormal. And then we talk through it, and I'm like, well, it's probably because of X, Y, and Z. But things that are obviously a little bit more like alarmist or flaggy, if we're seeing like very pale colored stools, frequent yellow stools sometimes have got, you know, can signify issues with the gallbladder and liver and fat. And probably why we're on that too, on the fat subject, stools that float. Quite frequently, we're probably thinking, okay, why is it floating? Because fat naturally will float above water. So, you know, if you've got issues with fat breakdown to the point where I've even had clients when they look at their stool in the toilet bowl, it's like a yellowy color, but there's almost like a fat film that they can see,
that oily film
in the water. So if that's something that you're seeing quite commonly too, we probably want to have a conversation around, you know, why you're not breaking your fat down in the digestive tract. So again, color, you know, what's another color that we talk about? So we sort of see yellow, pale, and black are obviously not super ideal, but shades of brown are pretty standard. If you're someone who's getting shades of red, which I've had this conversation with my clients as well, watermelons, beets, all of those things. I've had an interesting experience with beetroot where I thought I was dying, but I just ate.
I think most people have done that.
So again, like, don't, you know, if you're someone who usually has a healthy stool and then all of a sudden has a red one and you're thinking it's blood, just have a think back to the last 24 to 48 hours, depending on your bowel habits. Have you consumed a lot of beetroot or watermelon or something that's got a red stain in it? Because, you know, what we do eat obviously influences the color of our stool as well. So poos can be all crazy colors and shades. It usually is a sign of something that you're eating or taking as a supplement, but there are obviously some red flags as well.
Hi guys, just a quick note to let you know we are now offering $10 off my cookbook Eat for JCN podcast listeners only. So there is a new discount code you can use, JCN podcast, all one word in capital letters. Head to the website. The link is in the show notes and you just use that coupon code at checkout and that will give you $10 off. Really excited to bring you this. It's a way for us to say thank you for listening to the podcast. And again, that is JCN podcast, all one word. Head to the website, link in the show notes. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I wonder if you have lots of food coloring, like lots of food. Yeah, I don't know because I don't have kids, but I'm wondering, like, when kids eat like a whole lot, say you add, I don't know, a whole lot of blue food coloring with food, whether it would make,
I know red food coloring can, because I know mum's had that in ER when she was a nurse. She told me that because she said like watermelon and red food dye are two big things that parents will bring their kids in thinking that they're bleeding from the bowel.
Right.
And she does a 24-hour dietary recall. They've been at a kid's party and had a fuck ton of slurpy stuff and watermelon.
Yeah.
So I do feel like it obviously, plays some part, but I'm not sure about blue.
different colours. okay, gas. Right. So I feel like we just have to touch on gas because with stools often will come gas. Not always, but what we will see is that when someone does have a bowel movement, there can be a lot of gas, a lot of explosive gas. I'd say this probably tends to happen more with like the looser bowel movements, but I definitely wouldn't say it's always that because there could be other people who are like, more on that blocked up side and
like they
finally go
and
there's lots of gas that comes with it too. Mm. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting one, but the gas is interesting in that usually it's either going to be probably from the constipation side, right? Like a lot of trapped gas mm-hmm. because of like that slower transit time. But definitely in both camps is microbiome. So like those microbes that are producing and fermenting different types of gases, there's going to be more of a buildup of that. And when you do finally go to empty your bowels, there can be a lot of gas that's expelled at the same time. Again, there's a normal amount, like as far as like just moving your bowels and there's a bit of gas that's there, like fine. But we're talking about like excessive gas. And often there may even be some pain that is present with that gas as it passes, or even like when you need to go, like a lot of, we're trying to differentiate and just talk about stools today, but a lot of the time when people are having issues, whether it's any end of the spectrum, when they do actually go to move their bowels, there may be a lot of like prior to going, some abdominal pain, some bloating, like that gas build up. So when they do actually finally go to the toilet, like not only is it about the stool itself, there's a lot of that gas movement that happens too. So yeah, we'll often ask questions around that, and even we'll ask you about smell. Like obviously gas has a smell, but some gas can be really stinky and odorous, which can be influenced by different types of foods again. But if you've got like very offensive, stinky, odorous gas all the time, that is another flag for us as far as what's going on with the microbiome and the types of bacteria producing that gas. So gas is definitely important. And I don't know if I've missed anything.
No, I don't think so. One. I think that's, yeah, it's, yeah, so it's just,
yeah,
again, what's normal, and this is what we, I suppose we're going to cover, like what is normal and not a red flag versus something that you need to be worried about. So,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you covered it all.
How often stools are passed is probably the last one I had on the list for us in context here, but I guess this probably bleeds into like what is normal. Mm. So like, yeah, we've kind of talked already about like how stools can pass quickly versus the looseness versus, yeah, the constipation and what can happen there classically. But I guess even within that, like you can have more of a classic IBS presentation too. So you can get someone who may go in quick succession and have quite a few bowel movements throughout the day and feel like they're a complete empty out. They're like, oh my God, I've got nothing in my system. And then they actually may not go again for a couple of days, like 2-3 days. And then when they finally go, they feel like they're constipated. Mm. Like that can be quite common, this swinging from constipation to
alternating bowels,
diarrhea. Yeah. Yeah, alternating bowels. So, and that's sort of like a classic IBS-y sort of diagnosis, which is another topic for another day, or is probably already on another podcast. Mm. But yeah, I think it's not always as succinct as like you're going to go the same every day, particularly when there's things going on within the gut. Like it can actually vary in its patterns day to day. And I don't know, I see a lot of that with clients where they're just like, oh, well, ask me on what day, what's actually going on. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like we should talk off the back of that about what is actually normal to give people an idea of like what we're thinking when we're thinking about stools being passed and what's not, normal versus not normal. So again, do you want to chat about that
one? Yeah. So I would just say like if we're looking at what we would consider like a well-functioning healthy stool / microbiome, the little checklist that you could just ask, or the little checklist that I would say I aim for with my clients is literally, are you passing a stool most days? Yes or no? If no, are you passing a stool every second day? When you go, do you feel like it's a complete evacuation? So do you feel like you've completely emptied your bowels? Yes or no? And what's the consistency like? And is there any pain, blood, mucus, bloating, gas associated? So that's a very quick nutshell of how I would ask questions. But if we're looking for what's normal, what we would just say, if you're having a bowel motion most days, every day or every second day or a couple of times a day, it passes easily. You feel like you have a complete evacuation, and it's somewhere between three to four on the Bristol stool chart. So it's smooth like a sausage. It holds its shape and you're not seeing any undigested food, blood or mucus. And you're hitting that strike rate 80% of the time. You've probably got a pretty happy little gut.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. I like what you said there too, about 80, 90% of the time.
Yeah, because I think that's the thing. Like, so like, and I was thinking back to when we did our first podcast on this and we might have been, I don't know, I can't remember because I'm probably have to listen to the podcast, but, you know, like we may have been a little bit more cutthroat with, you know, how optimal the stool should be, you know, because as we work in this space, as we talk to more people, as our understanding of the microbiome changes, like our questioning around things is going to change, but also to, you know, like it's also – I think we've kind of not us, but I just think the health space in general, it has shot itself in the foot a bit in the space that it's now expecting, or it's kind of like alluding to people that if you don't have 100% success rate, like if your stool's not the same time every day, shoots out like a little jet plane, holds its shape in the toilet bowl, like if you're not doing that every day, that there's something wrong, you know, and that's not the case either, because there's so many things, as Jess and I have talked about, that will influence your stool every day. Like, are you stressed? How hydrated are you? Have you changed, you know, your dietary fiber intake? Did you eat a lot of fiber for 3 days and then not much the following few days? So there's always going to be things that are going to influence your stool. And I think that's why an 80% success rate, you know, is something more achievable rather than becoming so, you know, anxious that if you're still not perfectly on time every day looking a certain way that there's something wrong with you, because I guarantee you there's probably not. So
no, it's such an important point. And I was just speaking to a client, this is probably why this topic came up this week, that was kind of fresh on my mind, about this, as far as getting really hyper fixated on having perfect bowel motions. And it's really hard when you've been working with gut issues for some time, because you do really, and we've talked about this in other podcasts with relation to all sorts of conditions, like you do really get hyper focused on the symptoms. And if that is around the gut and around the bowels, like you can, anytime there's any variation, like you've worked really hard to a point and you're feeling pretty good, but if there's any type of variation, it's like, oh no, what's wrong? And also questioning, like I even had this client say to me, like, I actually don't know what's normal anymore. Like, I'm not sure if like what I'm experiencing is normal. And this is, it's really hard to like work through with a client. It definitely involves some really honest, vulnerable conversations around like understanding what's normal, and also like understanding your relationship with your health and your fears, and also unfortunately even things like social media and like what that presents to us as far as like, yeah, as you were saying, Rissy, like perfection, or whether there's a bloating element and it's about like how flat the stomach should be. It can be really hard, and no one is going to feel 100% all the time in all aspects of health, whether it's about your energy or it's like feeling a bit bloated or having a crappy period occasionally, or how your immune system's functioning occasionally, and stools are like this. So it's so critical to realize that you need to allow variation. And yeah, as you said, we've touched on some of those as we've gone through, like we've listed these things that we check for, but we have to understand that day to day and life can have an influence. So yeah, things like you mentioned with the stress and hydration, like again, I was the client I was speaking to yesterday who's generally going really well, but has just recently been struggling with some constipation, but going, you know, instead of being like, oh my God, like all of your IBD issues are flaring up, it was more obvious going through everything. It was like, she's not drinking enough water or having enough fiber. Mm. Like it's just basics. let's start with these basics. Mm. And if you're generally going well and then you have a bit of a change in your bowels, it's like, well, what have you been eating lately? Like maybe you have changed your fiber. You know, for some people it can be like good old legumes. We spoke about this with Paula, talking about, like, you know, when you start introducing, that was in the second podcast previously, I'll link in the show notes, but when you start eating legumes, if you're new to legumes or if you don't eat a lot of them and then you do eat a lot of them, like you're going to see a change in the bowel motion as a response, because it's a different variation of fiber. Mm. So it's not a bad thing. Mm. It's just a change in the texture of the bowel, or perhaps the behavior of the bowel, or how gas is being produced. Things like chili, right? Like depending on how you react to chili. I feel like you've got an iron gut to chili.
I've got
though.
An iron gut for chili. Yeah. Honestly, it sickens people the amount of chili I can consume. Yeah. Honestly, it's wild. Like if we do tacos, it's an example of how much fucking chili I can have. Like I can't make the taco mince too spicy because Mick's a pussy and he sweats over capsicum, so it ruins my life. But if I'm doing tacos with my dad and my brother, we're all chili heads, but I even have more than them. Like our taco mince has got chili beans in it as well as fresh chili. So it's hot as it is. But then when I make my taco, it's got sriracha, jalapenos, fresh chili, and then the taco mince. I fucked myself up last night though, not from a gut point of view, but just because, you know, when you grow chilies, it's such a wild card as to how hot they are sometimes. And because I've had so many different chili bushes and Dad's had different chili bushes, I've got this bag of frozen chilies, like in the freezer. We freeze them all so you can just cut them up and add them to things so you don't waste them. Anyway, and last night I just got a fucking hot one and I chopped up an entire chili and put it over this stir fry that Mick had made. And yeah, it put me through my paces, like, because I'd already had like this tiny little bowl of stir fry with this entire load of chili and coriander. And not my gut's fine this morning, by the way. I don't get the loose bowels or the bloating or anything like that. But yeah, I did put myself through my paces.
You did feel it.
My mouth was like this, like, did you put too much on, did you? And I'm like, just a little bit, but I'll be fine.
Yeah, it's a common one. And like I was just thinking too, again, this can be part of what people can get in their head about, but even changing in your environment with your diet, like I think of when I go over to Bali or somewhere like that, like whether I pick up a gut bug aside, but I go from eating my diet to a very Balinese diet. So I'm having lots of white rice as my main fiber, you know, instead of all of the different grains that I have when I'm at home. Mm. So like we'll see while I'm in Bali a change in my bowels as far as frequency, as far as volume, because my fiber intake changes. Yeah. It's not a bad thing. Like I know what's happening, yeah. But it's important to highlight how these things can happen occasionally and that is okay. Yes, we want to see 80%, 90% of the time what Carissa was describing, but you need to be aware that things will change occasionally and that's all right. It's looking for the other areas that we've talked about and like ongoing patterns that fall into what we've talked about.
I think that comes down to two, like if you knowing you're normal and if you're in tune with your body and you're in tune with your diet and you know, like for me, my gut is never exactly the same, but I know what her normal is. So I know my diet inside out. I know my gut inside out. So if there was ever a red flag to come up that was noticeable to the human eye or the symptoms and stuff like that, I would know what's outside of my normal. So I know when to be concerned. Yeah. And I think that's what we try and educate. I know with a lot of my clients, you've been saying, like we find your normal. So we work through all the things that are things that shouldn't be going on. Then we work, you get you to a stage where your gut functions well, like what you were talking about with your client. And then we're just able to talk you through. So if something does slightly change, we have a good conversation about it. And we're like, yeah, that's cool. That's just you've dropped your fiber or your water intake. Something like that. Yeah. So when you're very aware of what your normal is within the realm of, you know, what is classed as, you know, a normal healthy gut, it's very easy to identify when you do and don't need to be concerned. Like you said, when you've traveled, like I know when I go camping, my fiber drops off considerably because it's a lot more toasties and, you know, potatoes and stews and things like that. Like my fiber is completely different when we're camping, so I know my gut's going to respond differently and take a couple of days to adjust to that, and that's just how she rolls. So I don't stress about it, I just crack a beer and sit by the fire and not worry about it.
the only other example I'd say before we finish up that I had popped on the list, and I just thought this was worth mentioning, as you're saying, like knowing your self. This is all comes back to like knowing your gut, knowing your bowels, like we're just saying, look at the toilet bowl, look at what you're passing, just to get to know what your normal is. I definitely over the last month or so was having changes with my bowels and I was like, what is going on? And what I worked out pretty quickly is that it was from electrolytes and sugar mixes. So I've been having a lot. So if I was going, and it was happening more, this is how I sort of finally put my finger on it, was like, because I could be doing that throughout the day, throughout the week quite frequently. But when I did some longer runs and had more of it, that's where it became more obvious. It was like, it was literally within the day, by the end of the day, I was just like, whoa, like with how I was feeling and then how my bowels responded the next day. So that's just been about then tweaking like what I can handle as far as like the balance between the electrolytes and the sugars that are in the mixes, and the dilution of that to the water and what my gut personally can deal with. And now that, like, obviously it's always fine tuning, but like even already it's like I'm just in such a better space with it. But I could easily, again, because I know me and I know what's normal, I was like, something's not right. There's something that I've changed or there's something going on here, and I was able to like go, so it's okay, like it's no big deal. You're just like having a little bit of runner's gut. You've got the savvy mind to figure this out, so let's get this sorted.
Exactly. That's such a common one though, like a lot of those glucose electrolyte mixes cause issues for a lot of people. And I think we talk to people a lot about that in clinic. I get a lot of my clients to separate their sugar from their electrolytes, so they're not buying the glucose and electrolytes together. So we can load with electrolytes and then just top up with the tiniest bit of sugar for those longer runs, I find help.
That's it.
I had the same thing though a while ago. I can't even remember if we talked about this on a podcast, but same thing, process of elimination, but I know my gut and I know it well. And all of a sudden, for no reason, I was getting bloated, like really bloated towards the end of the day and just like a bit more constipated. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I'm like, great, I've got SIBO. This is it, dying. No, it wasn't like that. But
we're talking about like just being, all like, no, it's fine. We're just practitioner brain. I've got SIBO.
Great. It's all, I have to do a FODMAP diet. Kill me now. No, all my clients doing FODMAP diets, you're totally fine. but anyway, so again, I do what you do. I go back and go, okay, what's new in my life over the last couple of weeks? Because this bloating was something that just gradually happened, and then over like a week or two, I was just so bloated. Like I'd have my morning smoothie and boom, bloat. So it's something that built up, and I'm like, okay, this is not normal. What have I changed? And sure enough, I just bought a different protein powder to what I normally buy. Read the ingredients, fucking inulin's in there, which doesn't like my gut. For everyone listening, don't go and check everything for inulin, because inulin's not a problem for a lot of people. It's just a problem for some of us. But inulin as a prebiotic added to things is just a fuck no for me. Just my gut doesn't like it. It definitely doesn't like it in bigger doses added. I can eat inulin-rich foods and have no dramas, but as an actual, supplement as a prebiotic, it's a no. So, I just literally ditched the protein powder, bought my other stuff, it settled down within 2 to 3 days and my gut was back to normal. But I didn't throw the tools out of the basket. I just did some logical thinking, what's changed here, what's going on, and and you can usually work it out when you know your gut.
Yeah, exactly. Love it. Well, I think that gives a really good, well-rounded idea for everyone. So we definitely hope that you can take the aspects from this to, one, look more if you're not looking, because as Chris said right at the start, it's such a window into your gut. It's a report card of what's going on in your gut. It's a really good way to get to know the patterns of your own individual gut health. So we really can't encourage you enough just to be aware of this. So if anyone was to ask you these questions about consistency and blood and mucus and undigested food, you'd be like, yep, nah. Like you just know. So get to know it. It's the best thing that you can do as far as your gut health. And on the flip side of that, if you are someone that has spent a lot of time working on your gut and had a lot of issues around bowel movements, just please keep in mind what we're saying about getting too fixated on it and allowing flexibility for all of the different things that we've mentioned with foods and life and stress. And even, Chrissa and I are sharing our own personal stories for a reason, because it's like we live and work in this space and we don't expect to have a perfect bowel motion every day.
Bloody love it when you do though.
God, yeah. Isn't it the best feeling? Like A plus.
A plus. Should be putting that in the JCN team chat. Snap. No, can you imagine? Steph would be mortified. She'd be like, she too would far,
she'd be gone. Too far. She would be gone.
Oh dear. Anyway, thank you for listening to our shit talk.
Thank you so much. We'd love it, as always, if you can share the podcast. It helps others find us. And obviously, if you think this topic was useful, share as well in your socials. But otherwise, I'm just saying otherwise, and then as I'm thinking, I'm like, we didn't give you guys any recommendations.
Oh, fuck.
But Carissa's got a blind panic in her eye, so maybe we'll just skip them for today.
I didn't even think of it, actually.
No, we'll sum it up there. So thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.